You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with the cardio for those deep water championship rounds. Not that we needed them with this event. I am Mags, and with me today is my son, Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
Oh, well, not too bad. Been a busy day, but...
Yeah, did you end up getting time to catch up on the event because you did a Carlos special and fell asleep halfway through?
Hey, I accidentally won the first fight, the Lando one, I fell asleep at. That was about the second round in, but all the rest of the fights, I actually woke up and managed to catch.
So, we're talking today about UFC Fight Night 167. Quite a lot of prelims, so we'll quickly fly through them. We started with Mark De La Rosa, who made his history today with the first ever husband-wife team fighting on the same card, but unfortunately he ended up getting knocked out in the second by Raul Impava. Then Macy Kazon picked up a win in the women's bantamweight by decision over Shanna Young. Going into the men's bantamweight, Mirabar Divashvili, he picked up the decision against Casey Kenny in a well fought fight. I enjoyed that fight, to be fair. Then another decision, we got Devin Clark in the light heavyweights defeating Daquan Townsend, and then another decision in the lightweight division this time, Jim Miller and Scott Holzman. Jim Miller picking up the decision, a match that 5 years ago probably would have been on the main card, but now it's in the middle of the prelims. Going into the bantamweight division, former title contender John Dodson continuing his good run of form recently, picking up the lightning fast third round KO of Nathaniel Wood, really came out and stormed in that at the end of that fight. And then the featured prelims, and another one that a few years ago probably would have made the main card, Tim Means losing to newcomer Daniel Rodriguez. A big victory for Daniel Rodriguez. It's a big name, is Tim Means, to be fair.
Well, not just a big name, but also on 3 weeks' notice for him. Mm-hmm. I think it was John Anik who was telling the story. The guy was like sat in his car when he got the phone call, basically saying like,
"Yeah,
yo, do you want to fight Tim Means?"
I seen an interview with him, and he said he'd been waiting for a long, long time for this opportunity. He'd gone through the contender series, and nothing really came of it. And then obviously he got the phone call and made a massive statement for himself. But going on to the main card, we got six fights altogether. To be fair, it's not the best card in terms of action. There were a few fights that you'd call snooze fests almost, but there was a lot of controversy in the card, and there were also an absolutely stunning knockout. But we will get to that later in the show. We started with Lando Venata, the guy who came in many, many moons ago, last minute to take a fight, and it seems like he's got about 10, 15 fights for the UFC out of it. He was taking on Yancy Medeiros. This, on paper, looks like it could have been an absolute barn burner of a fight, but for me, it ended up being two styles that kind of cancelled each other out a lot. Venata picked up the decision, and it was a unanimous decision. He won all three rounds, and quite fairly, to be honest. I felt that Medeiros really struggled to find his range all the way through the fight, and he was kind of reaching a lot of the time to get his shots, and Venata was in and out picking his little combinations and just staying out of that range, and basically that's how he won the fight. I think Medeiros seemed to be more aggressive, but Venata seemed to be the much more smarter, intelligent fighter, where he was looking for his moments to pick off his shots, in and out, one twos and away he went. And it was kind of the theme all the way through the rounds. Medeiros didn't seem to have like much more of a changing game plan, and Venata knew his game plan was winning, so he kind of stuck with it, and we got into this like kind of chess match situation. Medeiros ended up bleeding from the nose, and he did a very, very silly thing of blowing it out mid whilst in the corner Luckily, it didn't swell up too much, and it ended up with, like I said, Venata picking up the unanimous decision and a fair decision for me.
See, that's it. Like I said, I didn't catch most of the fight, but the one thing I can I'm going to add to that is, where does Medeiros go after this fight? Because obviously, a guy like Venata, a lot of people don't know him, but this is the guy who's beat Tony Ferguson. This is the guy who's been in there with some of the best. He's been around for a long time. And Medeiros, his last win came in 2017. Now, I know he's away-in and they're trying to push it on that scene, but are the UFC going to be willing to keep feeding him to these guys who really, and it's not even about they're going to hurt him or destroy him, it's more of when you're fighting and you're going on a losing streak rather than a winning streak, your credibility goes down. Mm-hmm. And not only that, say for instance, you go through the Contender Series, the Ultimate Fighter, and you get one or two fights in the UFC, and they're like thinking, you know what, it's not like you're not good, it's just you need a little bit more experience. You get cut there, most majority of the time you're getting picked up by a big organisation. Mm-hmm. Where Medeiros, the way he's going on these losing streaks, so when he does get cut, all these other organisations are going to be like...
It's not a spring chicken.
It's not like a big name. It's not like they're going to go, oh, just because he's been at UFC he's going to draw a big crowd. Not necessarily, yeah, fair enough, they picked him up and went to Hawaii, but but other than that, he's not a massive name, but yeah, where does Medeiros go, basically from that decision loss?
Yeah, exactly, and you've also got to take into account that as good of a fighter that Lando Venata is, he's not pushing for a title shot. He's not even, I would say, someone who you call a gatekeeper.
Yeah.
He's very much middle of the pack. And if you as a fighter are getting fully controlled for 15 minutes and you can't enforce your own game plan on someone of that caliber, your time in the elite company of UFC might be up. So after that, we go into another decision, and this one was way more decisive for me. Ruggiero Bontorin taking on former title contender Raborg. Raborg again missing weight. I think that's four times now he's done it in his career. Something really going wrong with his training camp, and maybe it might be time for him to think about, is this the right division for him? In terms of the action, he absolutely dominated Bontorin. The first round was probably Bontorin's strongest round, to be fair. He got some shots off, but Ray was so good at controlling against the cage, controlling against the floor. His groundwork was really, really good. In this first round, he was attempting to isolate arms. He was attempting to lock in some really clever submission moves. Did it end up getting a submission? Like I said, it went to decision, but then we got into the second round and it was literally 4 minutes and I think 9 seconds of Borg just in control on top of Bontorin. There was nothing that Bontorin could do. He just seemed to have no kind of a game plan. He did try and attempt his own manoeuvres with the likes of Kimuras and stuff like that, but Borg's speed and his quickness and the way he transitioned just really, really, like, it just outshone Bontorin. And then we get into the third round, it's pretty much a lot of the same. I felt like that Bontorin tried a little bit more in this third round. The judges actually gave two 10-8 rounds to Raborg. I felt that was maybe a little bit overboard. I would have definitely given at least that second round 10-8. The third and the first I would have probably given 10-9. But and overall, Borg can be very happy with that decision, I think.
Oh, definitely. Speaking about the two 10-8 rounds, and at first when I was speaking to you last night, and I didn't think about it. When I actually was thinking about it afterwards, and I'm like, hang on a minute. Fair enough. He dominated that fight for me from start to finish when I was thinking about it. Because even though Bontorin came in tonight as the underdog, he's only had two previous fights in the UFC against lower name guys. This was a big step up in competition for him.
You want him? I mean, Borg's number three.
Well, that's it. And he still took rank three to decision. He didn't get knocked out, he didn't get stopped. Fair enough, he didn't stop him, but he still took it to decision and still put up a tough fight. Borg still had to fight to get that win. And I know that he were trying to put more effort in, so again, he didn't get cut because of missing weight for, like you say, the third or fourth time. So yeah, he was trying to put that extra effort in, to put that extra performance on. And it's the sort of performance that he'll put on, a lot of casuals will say that were boring, that were crap, but actually, if it were in New York or somewhere else like that, fair enough, yeah, might be, I might agree with you. But the fact in they were fighting at high altitude, which is so gut-wrenching as it is, one round feels like you've gone free when you're fighting at that high altitude. And for Ray Borg to be able to go in there and for a bit dominating wrestling for 15 minutes straight, like I say, in that round two, he had that 4 minute of control. It went straight for the takedown, like straight away. Now that's hard to do, to keep up that pace for 15 minutes, especially at high altitude. So that was a spectacular performance. But again, like I say, Bonterin. I'll get you right one there. Bonterin. He can't look sour on this loss. He's just going to be, like we say all the time on the show, he's going to be another one of these fighters where it's like, take the loss on the chin, mate. Yeah, you lost the fight, but learn from it, come back stronger. You've won your first two in the UFC. Don't let this one be a downer. You fought a way higher up competition.
Yeah, it was definitely a step up, and like you said, whilst he didn't get the victory, and he was dominated,
he learnt a hell of a lot.
Yeah, there were a lot to learn from that. Going into the next fight, this was in the lightweight division. We had Brock Weaver. I think he was making his UFC debut, and he was taking the native Indian, and he was taking on Kazula Vargas. This is where we start talking about controversial happenings in these fights. Started off very exciting. I felt that Brock Weaver, it kind of reminded me of a Clay Guida kind of fighter, where he was very like energetic and dynamic, but very quickly, Vargas was outshining him for me. He tried for a flying knee, got for a takedown. Weaver did very well to try and sneak like a guillotine, and it looked actually very 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 tight. But Vargas escaped that and then got into guard, and basically it was all Vargas from then in. Got a few punches, but the end came. When Vargas landed a knee to a very, very downed opponent, and it was clearly illegal. The referee straight away stopped it, and rightfully so, Brock Weaver picked up the victory via decision, via illegal knee. I felt that if that didn't happen, Vargas were probably on his way to winning that fight, so he's really, really shot himself in the foot. I mean, we all know mistakes can happen in a fight. He looked incredibly like disappointed and angry at himself because he knew what he'd done. It's definitely a big learning curve, and I think Brock Weaver has kind of pulled a victory out of the bag there. But for me, this was very, very good refereeing. The fact that he saw that it was a legal knee and he stopped instantly. We'll get later on to where we kind of counter that with another referee. But yeah, there's not really much more to talk about. Brock Weaver picking up the victory via disqualification.
Yeah, well, that's it. He came in as a big contender, and well, one of them. It's one of them things. You're just going to be so careful. Now I can understand. Vargas, I can understand like why he thought he could throw that knee in them split seconds. Once you've got someone pinned up against the cage and you're basically towering over them, when they push up on their hand, like as if they're getting up, and you see their shoulders rising, sometimes people do stand up with their feet and take everything off the floor whilst doing that. Some people are clever, some people keep on the floor. Now look at we were. I don't know if he did it on purpose, but in my eyes, he were playing that safe, keeping his butt on the ground whilst trying to posture up, and obviously to Vargas, when he's looking down and he's seeing Weaver's like feet flat on the floor, whilst him like leant against the cage, I don't think he realised, hang on a minute, with his horse he's still on canvas here.
Yeah.
So that's why I think he's through. But as I said, mistakes like that do happen, and like you said, good quality refereeing for not even giving him the option to continue, because I know he were kicking off with the ref saying he don't want to lose like that, but at the end of the day, he took the illegal shot and he got put out for 1 or 2 seconds. So that doesn't matter. The fact is he got put out, that referee has got an obligation to make sure that fighter is alright, because that he could have suffered a concussion there, he could have had damage from that knee, and if the referee allowed him to continue fighting and he took extra blows to the head, which were unnecessary, in more damage, then
yeah,
because that referee didn't do his job.
With strikes like that, they can incredibly easily lead to a concussion. Incredibly easy, and we'll get into that later on, but a fighter can sometimes not make the best decision for himself.
Well, that's why the ref is there. A fighter's there to fight. A ref's there to make sure the fighter's safe.
Yeah, exactly. So, going next into a women's fight, was it in the flyweight division, I think?
Yeah.
And again, as we mentioned before, this was a historical event because we had the first man and wife team fighting, and we had Montella De La Rosa, Mark's better off. She took on Mara Romero Barella, and unlike her husband, she actually picked up the unanimous decision victory.
Oh, definitely, but you've got to give it up to Mark. Well, getting knocked out starched at the opening event and still having the balls and the guts to coming out and supporting your wife in her fight. That's a true fighter and
a teammate, absolutely. This fight, again, it's another decision that was quite clear. There was no real room that you could argue that the decision is wrong. It was a very back and forth fight in terms of it was on the feet, then it was on the ground, then it was back on the feet. It was quite interesting to watch because there was a lot of technique used, but there was not ever any time when you thought one of the fighters was particularly in danger. I think that De La Rosa was better on her feet, and when it went to the ground, she was clearly better on the ground, although Barella did have her own attempts at submissions and good grappling. I think De La Rosa just had that much more rounded technique. She had the better kind of transitions. She had the harder shots, the more accurate shots. That, like I said, there's not a lot really of big talking points in this fight. It was just one fighter just being that much better than their opponent over the space of a 15-round fight. It's a good victory for Montana De La Rosa. Where it puts her in the rankings, I don't think it does much, but a win is a win is a win, I suppose.
Yeah, well, that's it. I don't think it puts her in any place for title contention. But there's a couple of things that, even though she won that fight, there are a couple of things for me that I think she needs to go back and work on. Like, for instance, a power. She didn't really display that much knockout power. The only time we were doing that, the third round when she dropped her and stunned her. Even when you sit on the feet when she were trying to throw the elbows and some of the strikes, Barella weren't really, you could see in her face, she weren't really fazed by the strikes. Like most fighters, they cover up, try and move their head. De La Rosa weren't really moving that. I don't think the strikes were affecting her. I think it was just more of De La Rosa's pressure from top and basically being on the feet where she just wasn't giving her any time to breathe. If both these fighters were to take anything away from that, I think Barbara's got a lot more to work on than De La Rosa, and like I said, her record's not looking quite good to say that she's in the UFC. But De La Rosa, she looked very well rounded, bar from it was that the lackluster of power just worked out. She was not going to scare a lot of top contenders in that division with that sort of power she displayed.
Yeah, I get what you mean, I understand, yeah. But we'll see where she goes from here. Let's get into the big controversy now. Co-main event, Michelle Pereira with his dancing and his flamboyance, taking on the person who started this, that kind of like charisma and flamboyancy in the UFC, Diego Sanchez, very famous for his yes cartwheels and stuff like that. This for me was, I felt that Pereira has really, really shot himself in the foot way more than Vargas did, because this got into the third round and Pereira dominated this whole fight literally from, I'd say from 5 seconds in, because we started with Sanchez doing a front flip axe kick almost, but after that it just didn't seem like the Diego Sanchez that we know. Pereira just looked a lot bigger for a kickoff, a lot bigger. His kind of dynamic fighting style is very reminiscent of Johnny Walker in how he fights. And Sanchez just didn't seem to have any option. He was pinned against in the back end of the cage. He was always like the one doing the running. Any kind of offense he tried, just couldn't get any kind of purchase or anything like that. Even when he tried like with his kind of Vitor Belfort style blitzkrieging, just couldn't get anything. And Pereira was picking him off with shots, and you could see where his shots were hurting Sanchez. This was kind of the same scenario for the first two rounds, where Sanchez just couldn't get any kind of momentum going. He couldn't get any like attacks apart from like the odd one or two shots, and it was Pereira kind of stalking Sanchez, getting those. I mean, he has those lengthy like kicks. He could get them from all kind of angles. His shots looked painful, and you could see Sanchez wincing every time he was getting hit. Getting to the third round, and it started the way that the last two rounds started, really. It was Pereira kind of almost showboating, Sanchez struggling to get his offense off, and then Pereira being able to pick him off at distance with his long limbs. But then Pereira lands a body shot, and you could see where it really hurt Sanchez. And then Pereira went in for the clinch, and then landed a couple of knees to the face, landed a knee to the body, and then you could see Sanchez drop to the floor, and then bang, he kneed him again, clearing the face. But this one looked way worse than the Brock Weaver one. You could see straight away where it almost, I don't know if a lot of the listeners have watched Bellator, but when MVP kneed Cyborg Santos in the head, and you could see where he crumpled his skull, Sanchez, you could see the welt and the cut straight away coming up where he'd been kneed from Pereira. Now, the controversy comes with the referee's actions. At the time, I felt that Jason Herzog, who for me is one of the better referees in working today, I felt he made a very, very bad call in not doing what Romero did in the Brock Weaver fight and calling it off instantly. This was a clearer illegal knee than the Brock one. My issue is he was giving Diego Sanchez, a fighter who was clearly impaired from that shot, the opportunity, or he was almost encouraging him to carry on fighting, which I think is very, very dangerous. The referee is in there to make sure the fighters are safe and that they don't get any harm to them more than they should have. And from everyone watching, Sanchez was not all there. Mm. He even said to the doctor he couldn't see out of his eye. The doctor said, no, this is, he's not able to see. And Herzog was like giving Diego Sanchez the choice to carry on, which he shouldn't have been doing. He should have been stopped. And eventually when Sanchez said that he couldn't carry on, he didn't feel like he would carry on, that's when he ruled it a disqualification to an illegal knee, which kind of baffles me, because if it was an illegal knee, why did it take the fighter to say, no, I can't carry on, for it to be a disqualification? It should have been a disqualification straight away. Like I said, at the time, I was actually quite, it pissed me off a little bit because it was dangerous. Yeah. I can now see from thinking about it and having a bit of time to reflect on it, I can see Jason Herzog's point. The fighters always want to fight on. It's hard to kind of gauge whether someone has got like some sort of brain injury. And Diego Sanchez is one of these fighters who always wanted to fight. So when I can kind of see him giving Diego that option to want to fight on, but if it was an illegal knee, it shouldn't have even got to the point where it was on Diego's shoulders to decide whether the fight carried on. And for me, it's kind of an issue that's happening in refereeing too often. There was the recent John McCarthy one with Stefan Struve, where Stefan Struve had taken quite a few groin shots, and McCarthy was almost coaching Stefan Struve to carry on the fight. Yeah. And this is what it felt a little bit like to me with Herzog and Sanchez. I don't think Herzog should have given Sanchez the option to carry on. I think it should have been taken out of the fighter's hands.
As many times he tried to give him the option.
Yeah.
A couple of times, a bit all right, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
he weren't giving him like any. So he was just like, I can give you more time if you want. Like, if you're all right to continue, like, oh no, we'll just think about it. I can give you. He told you can't fucking see.
Yeah.
Stop the fight. With a legend in Diego Sanchez, a guy who's been in the UFC for so long, but Michael absolutely fucked himself over there, because he were putting a whooping on Diego for literally them three rounds. Until he threw that fucking stupid knee.
Yeah.
Now Diego's one of them. Like I say, he always wants to fight. So for him to say he can't see in that lot, I don't believe he was lying. I don't reckon he could. I didn't think he could see. Because like I say, he's a fighter. He always wants to fight. He's not going to give up like that. But people will see the point is he was getting his arse handed to him. And if you're in the third round and you already know you're losing and you can't see a possibility of knocking this guy out or submitting him and he throws something legal, yeah, fucking damn right you're going to try and do that to get a win, because, yeah, you're getting your arse whooped, you weren't going to win. He does something stupid, you get your win. You walk out that building, you get paid for showing up, you also get paid for winning.
Yeah.
But you weren't winning, it's just he did a disqualification. But I think that's how Pereira look at it for the way of obviously what's going on.
Very reminiscent of the Rodriguez and Jeremy Stephens thing, where Jeremy Stephens were called out for basically acting like a bitch. And I've seen on Twitter today people calling Diego Sanchez basically a bitch for not doing this. But is it bitchy? Is it being a bitch, or is it the fact that your brains have absolutely scrambled because you've just had your face caved in with a knee? You can't see out one eye. How is that being a bitch? That's to me is sensible. Why would you fight on blind in one eye and you basically head spinning?
And not only that, you walk out the building again with that win.
Yeah.
And you get paid for winning that fight, not just for showing up. So it were a very clever thing of Diego Sanchez to do. Now, that's why this level of competition, especially in the UFC, you've got to be so careful with like the eye pokes, the groin shots, all this sort of shit. Accidents happen, but look at it. There were two disqualifications. They were in the prelims. Like, the referees were constantly telling fighters to watch their fucking eyes and stuff like that and stop grabbing the fence.
Yeah.
It's like it's getting... It's like fighters are getting away with it more and more, and because now the referees are starting to do something, this fighter's a pussy, or that fighter's a pussy, or that referee's a knobhead, or that referee's a knob. And it's like, it's not. It's just because fighters have been getting away with it that long. Like, John Bones, look, how long has he been getting away with eye pokes? Like, if that were any other fighter, if they went from fight to fight eye poking, most majority of the time, there'll be a couple of disqualifications in there, in their record. But no, John Bones, he got away with it for so long because of his name. But now referees are actually jumping on this sort of stuff and making the sport safer.
As they should.
Yeah. They're getting called out for it, like, oh, well, they're the bad guys. It's like, well, not exactly. Like, they're making sure that we can see these fighters fight again.
Yeah.
And they're making sure that these fighters can go back to the gym, train healthy, get back into another fight, and earn some more money. Like everyone else wants to see these fighters doing what they love to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, the main issue in this is Pereira is so talented in the octagon. As a fighter, he's dynamic, he's got power. He could be a big contender, but he's so fucking unprofessional. He's dancing to the octagon. He's gassing out in the first round. It's like he's not taking it seriously. And if he knuckled down and actually put effort into this, he'd be he'd be a big star, but he's kind of doing stuff like this that shoots himself in the foot. He's now picked up a loss that should have been a clear, clear victory and would have set him up for a big name fight next time, and now he's picked up another loss. Two and he should have a 3-0 record. He's now 1-2.
Yeah.
Shocking. So, into the main event, and this was everything that it made up for the rest of the card for me. Corey Anderson taking on Jan Błachowicz, both in the top level of that heavyweight division. I think Corey was probably ranked 5 and Błachowicz ranked 6, both kind of looking over each other's shoulder to see who can be the next person to challenge Bones. And this fight went, 3 minutes?
Yeah.
About 3 minutes. Started off quite tense, really. Anderson and Błachowicz did not want to touch gloves. Anderson started with a jabs. Błachowicz shrugging off Anderson's attempt at a takedown. And then Błachowicz started with those lethal punch combinations. Anderson hit back with a few body shots. Landed a nice left up to the head. But the end came when Anderson went for a low kick, but he kind of tucked himself to feint. And Błachowicz had seen it happen a couple of times, and he just wound up, landed that big leaning over and right, and you could see straight away, as soon as it connected, clean on the chin, Corey Anderson was nah. He went down. Błachowicz followed it up with one of the most brutal hammer fists I've seen since bloody hell, since Brock Lesnar used to do it. And it was almost wallop, God bless, and the fight was over. But the best part was the posturing versus Bones and Błachowicz at the end. I don't think Błachowicz has got a chance against Bones, but that posturing got me excited for that fight. Błachowicz with a massive, massive victory here. Carlos, give us your thoughts.
I were a little bit disappointed with Anderson. I think he should have... I think he didn't do enough of his talking with his wrestling for Błachowicz. I know DC made a good point of Błachowicz reacting every time Anderson were doing something, but I think if most people actually turn the audio down, Daniel Cormier, I think he were a little bit of the wrong guy to have been commentating that fight. Obviously with him snooping around them divisions and wanting to fight these guys, he's going to sound a bit biased, but but he worked actually that out. The couple of things he was saying, that was one of the right things. Błachowicz was reacting every time Corey were going in for them takedowns, but he wasn't doing nothing with it now. Look at his last fight against Johnny Walker, when he went for the level change a couple of times. Johnny Walker were reacting maybe 3 or 4 times. He did that now the 4th or 5th time he level changed. Johnny Walker reacted, he came over and cracked him with that overarm right. He didn't do any of that with Błachowicz. He just, it was like he were trying to box him, but I think he would look. I don't know if he trained properly for him or he just looked for him, but he didn't look like he respected him. It just looked like he looked at the same Błachowicz that he beat years ago, with the first one. And it's like, no, but Blakovic's boxing has came a long way since then. Same with his wrestling defense. Now, when Anderson did go in for a single leg, to be honest with you, that was probably the shittest single leg I've seen him do.
That's where Błachowicz just shrugged it off and basically laughed at him.
Well, he just knew, you've got no respect for me, I'm going to make you pay for it now.
And he did.
He knocked him out in that first round. Now, he's been working, looking at De La Rosa, Power, for instance. Yeah, you can be technical, you can win these fights, but you're not going to make these top contenders scare you. Mm-hmm. You're not going to make these top contenders go, fuck it, I'm not going to get in your distance because I know you're going to knock me out.
Yeah.
Błachowicz, they know that now. His last couple of fights, look at Rockhold, now Anderson.
Cleaned
them both. Yeah. So now he's got people in that division going, I got the perfect, look at fucking Daniel Cormier's face. When he did that, at Daniel Cormier, they put the camera on him. He looked like he was shitting his pants, hang on a minute, do I want to fight him?
Exactly like that. So he's got people at the division going, maybe Tim, is it a better idea to stay out the way so we don't crack them? Because if he hits you, he's going to put your lights out. Now, that's what makes Jones so scary. Jones didn't give a fuck when he knocked him out. He stood there, iron tall, coming, come on then. You might have knocked him out, but what the fuck are you going to do against me?
Exactly.
That's going to be... Fuck Reyes now, I know we're going to get that. We're going to get back to that bit, but fuck Reyes now, that's... Just off that performance alone, he's got bones.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dana will be at home wanking.
And the thing with it is something that we've mentioned quite a lot, it's learning from your losses.
That's
and
exactly Blackerich
has done that. He's being Polish is the base of his game, is the wrestling, is the ground game. And he's worked on that knockout power and he's proved it over and over again that he's more and more rounded every time he comes to fight. And he's got as much of a chance as anyone recently who's faced balls.
Well, that's it. Well, he went to his roots. He's gone to his roots like me. I've never been to another gym. I've been at Black Knights all my life. Now, a lot of these fighters, like, say, for instance, I say, there's a lot of fighters who will start out at a small gym and end up making it and then go, well, I'm here now. Well, I might as well go to one of these big gyms. Why? Stay where your roots were. Because look at these fighters who have gone to these places. They're fucked up. And look at Blackovich. When he left his head coach, his old gym where he started out, he started losing. He was losing his touch. It was like, what's this Blackovich? He went back to his old coach.
The proof is in the co-main event. We had Nightmare Sanchez, who was at Jackson Wink for such a long time, was destroying people. And then there were some issues with the gym. He went back on his own, and look at him now. He's a shadow of his former self.
And that's it. And a lot of people, to be honest with you, a lot of people are going to blame his coach for that night, going like, oh, why do you have one coach? His coach was saying at the end of it, just go for it, just there's no technical. Seriously, what could his coach have said to him at that moment in time? What could have made that any better, bar from his head coach, he's on his own, he's got no one helping him out, he's got no one telling Diego Sanchez any other stuff, it's just him telling Sanchez, stop pretending like you don't know how to fucking fight, get up off your stool and go try and finish this guy, this is what you fucking need to do, you're losing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, even Daniel Cormier basically like called him out on it, like, well, that weren't very technical. Motherfucker, what the fuck do you expect him to do? Diego Sanchez is getting his arse whooped for two rounds, he's on his own, what do you expect him to do?
Winning the third round technically still means you've lost two rounds to one.
Exactly, he needs to go out and finish the motherfucker.
So, I think me and Carlos are both in agreement that Blackerich has put his name right at the top of that.
Definitely.
That light heavyweight division. That's going to be a very interesting fight, and that'd be cool if that was in Europe. I know UFC have just said they've got the fight in Ireland set. Me and Carlos were having a discussion the other day about having a fight in London, something like Bones versus Blackerich at Wembley. That'd be ideal.
Well, that's it. Well, we're on about till coming to London now. If you're on about coming to London now, you have till on that event. You've got the English nation covered already, but you put Bones and Blackovich on that one. Now that's a fucking worldwide event.
Absolutely. So we're into another fight night next week. Fight night 168 from, I think it's from New Zealand. This one. So it'll be a fairly early start for us. I think the main card starts at midnight, so that's pretty good. Not a massively stacked card in terms of big names, but there's a lot of fights on the card. We've got Kai Kara France fighting on the card. We've got Emil Meek fighting on the card. Angela Hill fighting on the card. Going into the main event, we've got a couple of the Dagestan fighters on there. We've got Zubera Tukov, Magomed Mustayev. Carolina Kowalka, which is making a comeback after a while. She's taking on Yan Zhaon. The co-main event, Jimmy Crute, one of Carlos's young up-and-coming favourite fighters, taking on Mikhail Oleksychuk. And then it's pretty much the battle of the Kirby's here, because one of my favourite fighters, the Irish Dragon, Paul Feld, is taking on one of Carlos's favourite fighters, Dan the Pedo Hooker.
I think Dan's going to fuck him up.
Well, either way, it's going to be a fun fight, and it's going to be one of those fights that I mean, that lightweight division is stacked to fuck as it is.
It literally is.
Both of these need a massive. These need a massive statement to push themselves back in the title. When they interviewed him
They were having a little bit of a joke on Twitter, and Paul Felder said something, and I can't remember exactly what he said, but Dan didn't like it. He proper didn't like it. So this has turned from like a little friendly fight now to an utter. These two just now overnight, they just don't fucking.
Yeah, because
they just don't like each other.
This started at Dan Hooker's last fight when he won. Was it against
Ali Quinta? No, it wasn't Ali Quinta,
was
it?
Was it not Josh Neer? Anyway, it was his last fight, and Paul Felder was on commentary, and Paul asked Dan who he was calling out for his next fight. He said, "I'd actually like to call you out." So there was a little bit of banter in the octagon.
Yeah, Ali Quinta.
We had the Ali Quinta fight. And yeah, it's led to this, and it's kind of has turned a little bit like a little bit personal. So yeah. It's going to be fun. So yeah, catch us next week for that. Second week into a big run of UFC events. So, yep, you can follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby. You can follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos. Follow the podcast at FiveRoundsPod. Yep, that's the end, guys, and thanks for listening.
Adios, amigos.
You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network. Envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.